comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Very interesting thing just happened. I just think you ought to know about it. I've been doing the show now for 10 years, right? In 10 years, I've experienced I can't say I've experienced everything that there is to experience doing the show, but I've experienced a lot, including having a computer literally fry while I was in the middle of an interview. I mean, a little puff of smoke and it went up, you know, and that was it. And some of you remember when that happened here 4 or 5 years ago. But just at the time when we were to go on the air. Now, those of you listening by radio, and that is by far, that's the largest audience we have. Those of you listening, computers, AM radio, FM radio, shortwave, cell phones, that sort of thing, you're listening to the show. You make up like 98% of the audience, at least. But there's a small percentage, it's a big number, but it's a small percentage, who watch on our TV channel. At exactly the time to go on the air, the computer that runs the TV channel, on its own, without me touching anything, rebooted. I don't know. All I can say is it's either got gremlins in it, or it's got interference from people in the shadows. I do not know, but it just rebooted. So, weird stuff. Hey, if you're not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, you need to be subscribed to the K-Files e-zine. It's free. So, check it out on my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Very quickly, let me say this about a certain type of email I get. Every once in a while, I get emails from someone complaining about one of our listeners who calls in. Different listeners, you know, but complaining that about this listener or that listener, this caller, that caller. And look, I'm going to tell you straight up how this works. I have asked our producer to go through and delete all of those before I sit down and read and reply to emails. So starting today, starting right now, I don't even want to see them. And I'll be honest with you why. You know, if you have a complaint that you want to make to a guest, go for it. You think the guest is not being upfront, not being honest, and you want to challenge the guest, go for it. They are the ones who are the targets of everything, okay? I mean, they're presenting information. They have to stand up and defend their own information that they present. But the audience, the listeners, works like this. It's my family. 2.5 years I went overseas. I was over there longer than that, but for 2.5 years I didn't get a birthday card, a letter, a Merry Christmas, a nothing from family, but I did from our audience. So I don't want to go through all that criticism of my family, okay? Sorry, that's the way it is. We'll be back right after this. Before Before I introduce our guest for tonight, I want to just elaborate just a little bit on what I said just before break. During that 2.5 years, the audience became my family. That 2.5 years when I was out of contact with my family and I wasn't getting letters, Christmas cards, birthday cards, nothing. But I got email from our listeners wishing me a happy birthday. I got email wishing me a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I got email on a daily basis about other things. And so this audience has truly become like family to me. So if you have a complaint about you don't like to hear one of the callers, you know what you need to do? Grab the courage of your convictions, get up some guts, and dial. You call in. You make your comments. You make state your questions. But I'm not going to be reading emails complaining about our listeners. Okay, if you want to complain about me, you want to complain about a guest or anything like that, that's okay. But to complain about my listeners is complaining about my family, and that's not on the menu. My guest this evening is someone that I've seen on television in documentaries, and actually lives in the same general area that I live in, the same part of the country. He's in the Phoenix area, and his name is Mike Fortson. He was born in the UK, spent the first 18 months of his life there, and he's the son of a staff sergeant in the United States Air Force, and he was born in the county of Hertfordshire. And then they moved back to the United States. He did what all of us do here. He went to school and grew up. And in 1971, was drafted. He spent the next 4 years in service to his country, attached to the Navy with the Ceremonial Guard in Washington, D.C., which meant, of course, that his presence was often required at the White House during state dinners. He participated in full honor arrivals for foreign heads of state. He was at President Nixon's inauguration. He was at the funerals of Presidents Johnson and Truman, and involved in over 1,500 military funerals at Arlington National Cemetery. All of this, of course, means that he had to have White House security clearance. Following all of that, he did what most of us do, and that is he entered the workforce, he was married, he had a civilian career going, and everything was going wonderful, and still is, I presume. But it shifted gears. Everything shifted gears March the 13th, 1997. He got up that day at 4 in the morning, as he does every day, prepared to go to work, went through his day, but at 8:30 that night, there was somewhat of a paradigm shift. And he's here to talk with us about it tonight. Mike, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Now, I just have to ask you, because I have a new piece of equipment installed. Are you able to hear me okay?
I hear you fine.
That's wonderful. Okay, Mike, I've seen you on documentaries, several documentaries. Well, I know on one documentary, and then I've seen you on the news some. Talking about what the world has come to refer to as the Phoenix Lights. Yeah. I want to go back to that time. At that time, I was preparing to deploy to Bosnia, and I have to admit, I was unaware of this Phoenix Lights thing until I got to Bosnia. And then I heard about it via the internet, listening to Art Bell. But I didn't even know about it when it happened. And then I was gone for the next year. And I've had to learn about it, you know, in my in-between times when I would come back to the United States. But you were a part of it. You were there. So let's go back to March the 13th, 1997. It's 8:30. Tell us what happened.
Well, it started, I was asleep. It was 8:30 p.m. We had already had dinner. We were relaxing on our sectional sofa, more than likely watching the beginning rounds of the NCAA basketball tournament. It was Thursday night. I woke up from a brief nap. I leaned over to my wife. I said, I'm going to bed. And like you said, I get up at 4 in the morning, so that means you usually go to bed fairly early. So, and I looked at the clock. We had, the clock was on the TV, and it said 8:30. So I got up. I put my glasses on the bar, went down the hallway. In the master bedroom, the main window was about 6 foot by 6 foot, and it was open. It takes two hands to close. So as I was closing that window, my eyes were attracted to the northwest, and in the northwest there was three white, bright lights angled down at an angle that I could only think of would be a plane crash. I lived in Chandler, Arizona at that time. It's about southeast of Phoenix, about 23 miles, and we're in the flight path for incoming and outgoing Sky Harbor air traffic, airliners. They come out by us all the time. They're heading from the west. They will bank to the north, and then they'll go down by the Salt River, and they'll turn left, facing west, and then they'll land at Sky Harbor. But at that point in time, those planes are about 3,000-foot altitude. And what we saw, or what I saw at that point in time when I was closing that window, was a lot lower than that, and I could only think of a plane crash. So I ran, I grabbed my glasses off the bar, I told my wife, I think we'd probably been married about 25 years then, I said, get outside right now. And we opened the Arcadia door, and we went to the edge of the patio. We were facing west, and our heads were turned a little bit to the northwest. And to my amazement, confusion kind of sunk in because there was no plane crash. But what I was seeing was a large, black, boomerang-shaped craft getting ready to pass right in front of us. Now, it was 8:30 p.m. on March 13th, which the sky is fairly dark, but I'm looking to my northwest, and I'm in the southeast, and the gray background of Phoenix area, the metropolitan area, casts a gray shadow for several thousand feet up in the air. So as this passed through this, heading towards me, I had no trouble whatsoever determining that it was one solid object, and it was the biggest thing, Kevin, I have ever seen in my life. We don't have words in the English language that would describe what we were watching. Now, as the craft was slowly passing, and it was slow, 35, 40, 45 miles an hour tops. I said in my initial report you could chase it with your car and not get a speeding ticket. As I described earlier, there was Sky Harbor airplane traffic coming in. This craft went under a Southwest 737 that was coming in landing formation that was coming in. So it went under this craft, and I yelled. I was excited. I said, why did that plane not get out of there? Why didn't he get the gas and just get the heck out of there? Did you see that? And my wife says, yeah, she saw it. I mean, we were frozen. Our feet were frozen in the ground. We were actually telling ourselves not to blink, that this thing was so profoundly massive and just was not supposed to exist. And as it kept coming, it was passing in front of us. It was to the west of us. I said it was going down Alma School Road, and we were a half mile south of Chandler Boulevard and just east of McQueen in a brand new area called the Springs. And as it passed in front of me, I held out my left hand at the nose of the craft, and I put my right hand out at the end of the left wing, and I said at that point in time, that SOB is over a mile long. And what do you do when you see something like that?
How close, let me rephrase that question. Was this thing close enough that if it had noise, if it was generating any kind of noise, you should be able to hear it?
Without question, Kevin. It would have been one of the most horrendous tornadoes that you could ever imagine. As low as it was to the ground, the size of it, the pure massive size of it, in our technology would have created so much thrust because it was going so slow, it would have destroyed homes, I would imagine. I mean, yes, there's no question. I mean, we hear the jets that are coming in to land at the airport, and they're 3 or 4 miles away. This was much closer than that, and there wasn't a sound coming from this. If you were outside but not looking in that direction, you'd have never known it was there.
Okay, now, you think this thing, I chuckled because I'm thinking about some of the things I've heard about it. You think this thing was over a mile. I have heard that it was as wide, I've heard 2 miles, I've heard 6 miles.
Ah, but see, here's the thing, Kevin, is there wasn't just one craft.
Mm-hmm.
There was at least 5 and up to 8. And that's with all the responses. The 2-mile-wide triangle was the one that came in from the east that Max Saracen and his wife saw. Her name was Shala. But see, what they did, if you watched the National Geographic show last night, or even if you saw James Fox's I Know What I Saw,
mm-hmm.
they pretty much stay with the one craft coming out of the Kingman area up in northwestern Arizona, comes through Chino Valley, Prescott Valley, down into the Phoenix metro area, down towards Tucson, and then back up. Well, that's not true. We have 5:30 p.m. witnesses who saw three of the V-shaped craft together. So at that point in time, there are 16 witnesses at Sunset Point at Crown King that saw at least 3 of these boomerang-shaped craft.
Okay, now describe for us where that's located in Arizona, Crown King.
Well, if you're familiar with the Phoenix area, and even if you're not, if you go from Phoenix to Flagstaff, you go up a series of mountains.
Mm-hmm.
When you leave the Phoenix area, you start going up by Black Canyon City, and you start going up towards Crown King, which would be at the peak of the first mountain pass, I guess you want to call it, on your way up north. That's Crown King area, and it's also called Sunset Point. There's a rest area. Now, cars were stopped along the interstate, pulled off, and watching this. There was 3 of them that was incredibly low over the mountains, and witnesses said that there was 2 F-16s coming from the south. Now, here's why you never hear this story on TV, documentaries, reports. It is in books, and it has been talked about, but here's why. All 3 of these craft, pancaked on top of each other, formed a white ball of light and vanished as the 2 F-16s approached.
Now, the 2 F-16s coming from the south would have been coming from Luke Air Force Base.
That is correct. They were involved in at least 3 different events that night.
So these 3 gigantic craft pancaked on top of each other, turned into a big ball of white light, and then just vanished.
That's correct. That's witness reports that took the time to fill the reports out and turn them in. And I believe they turned him into Michael Tanner at Village Labs. Yes, sir. And that's why, you know, I tell producers all the time, I say, why don't you ever tell this story? I got so many of these events, so many witnesses that have told these stories that the producers won't even touch them. And they said, we can't put that out there. We just can't. I said, you know, the upper management of the production company won't allow it. The advertisers won't allow it. And more than likely, the people won't want to hear it. Well, you know, I want to hear about that. I want to read about these stories. I want to hear them. If they're from credible witnesses, I want to know about this. I can handle it. I can handle disclosure. You know, let's talk about this. Don't, you know, sweep it under the rug and act as if it didn't happen. Tell the people the truth.
Well, and you've just given us another great example of why I call them lamestream media. And,
without question, Kevin. I've had so many, you know, I don't want to brag or anything, but I've done like 7 documentaries. I've probably done 200 radio shows, at least 100 televised interviews. But you tell the producer, you tell the reporter these instances, and I got a lot more for you. But they just say, no, we that's going to get cut out. We can't tell that. We can't talk about that. And I said, what gives you the right to stop the freedom of information to the American people? You know, I mean, that's why we have, that's why people don't trust the media.
Well, that's true. But, you know, the good news is they're paying for it in lower and lower and lower and lower ratings, while internet radio and internet TV is skyrocketing in ratings. So I'm sad for the American people, but you know, there is, they call it alternative. Well, there's an alternative to lamestream media, and it's shows like this where we can hear folks like you tell us these things. All right, now these people, you said there were 16 witnesses, and I was just trying to picture in my mind as you were describing Crown King. I believe that's the rest stop that was closed down for a while.
That's correct.
Yeah, I know where that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not very far. It's not very far north of Anthem.
Maybe 25 miles from Anthem, maybe 30 miles south of Prescott Valley. It's on its way. It's on your way up north when you go to Flagstaff to see the snow.
Yeah, and as you're going north, it's on the right side of the road.
As you're going north, it would be on the west side. Yes.
On the left
side. On the west side of the interstate.
Yeah. Okay. Now, that happened at 5:30.
Yes, sir.
Was there anything from 5:30 till 8:30?
Well, the next report came in at 8:16 in Paulden, Arizona, which is north of Chino Valley, probably 9 or 10 miles, which would be north of Prescott, about 20 miles. A retired Army major by the name of Lyle Vann was outside. He had the large craft pass over his head, and that was at 8:16. At 8:16, he called the National, or right after he saw it, he called the National UFO Reporting Center, and he talked to Peter Davenport at that time and reported it. And I think there was a little confusion in there because it was reported initially incorrectly, and they said it was a retired police officer. And Lyle got kind of upset with that because he's a very proud American, a veteran, decorated veteran in Vietnam War, and he's a retired Army major, and he kind of wanted that. You know, they call him a retired police officer, but nonetheless, it was at 8:16.
Okay, and his name was Lyle what?
Lyle Vann, V-A-N-N.
And so he sees it, and is it stationary? Is it moving? Is it, which direction is it headed?
No, it was slow moving. It was slow moving. It passed over his little ranch that he has in Paulden, and it was the darndest thing he's ever seen. I mean, it took him by surprise.
All right. This break just took me by surprise. I was not watching the clock. We have to step away for a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. Don't go away, folks. More from an eyewitness to the Phoenix Lights. Welcome back. We're talking with Mike Fortson. Mike is a witness to the Phoenix Lights. He has had a real good, close, personal look at whatever it was that floated over Phoenix that night back in 1997. And he's done quite a bit of research into who else saw what, and he's sharing that with us. Mike, when the break took over, you were telling us about this sighting that Major Lyle Vann had, and he's north of Phoenix. He sees this thing at 8:16. Was it headed toward Phoenix at that time?
Yes, it was heading south.
Mm-hmm.
And he only saw one. It was just one single object. As it was heading south, the next report comes to Chino Valley, through Chino Valley, and that's 9 miles south. And at that point in time, at a later point in time, probably about 7 years later, I met this guy who was a flight instructor at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical Institute. There's Love Field, which is a landing strip between Chino Valley and Prescott. It's called Prescott Airport. And at that point in time, he called me and invited me up for lunch. He's now retired. He is a flight instructor. He had a student pilot. They were in a twin Cessna Golden Eagle. At that point in time, they were looking down. They were doing touch-and-goes at Love Field. The pilot was learning how to fly. They were flying around Chino Valley, and they were looking down, and they looked down, and the lights went out. The lights down below on the ground went out. They thought there was a power outage. And then all of a sudden, just a few seconds later, all of a sudden, the lights came back on. So they didn't know what was going on. Then all of a sudden they looked ahead and they seen this large black craft underneath them and was heading south. It did not disturb their plane. It did not disturb anything. And he told me, he goes, Mike, I thought we were going to die. And he said that thing just kept on going south as if we weren't even there. But it went under their plane. That was in Chino Valley. That's about 105-10 miles north-northwest of Phoenix.
Okay, and what time was that sighting?
I'd probably say it's around between 8:17, 8:20, somewhere around in there.
Okay. All right, now, so it's about 100 miles north of Phoenix at that time. 10 minutes later, it's over Phoenix. That means that it had to speed up a lot after they lost sight of it.
Well, and yes, and here's where, you know, they, let me start at when the media got a hold of this, they did not do their due diligence. They did not go out and ask people, where were you, what did you see, what time was it? Because here's where something interesting happens. From Chino Valley goes to Prescott and Prescott Valley area, and that's where Ann Baker had her sighting. But also, there's a rancher at Dewey Humboldt who said that one of these large V's was right above his cattle barn for about 15 minutes. Now, that throws everything out of whack if it's only one craft.
Yes, it does.
So there were multiple craft, and it took probably 6 years before people actually accepted the fact that it was so massive throughout the state, there's no way one craft could have done all this. And besides, we just saw three at 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
We saw three of them together. So Ann Baker's craft is more than likely what Tim Lee saw, because Ann Baker said that it went from a V-shape to a semicircle. It went from white lights to red lights and shot away. Tim Lee said, as it was coming into his North Phoenix home, that it was semicircle, and then it went to V-shape as it slowed down and slowly passed over his home near Squaw Peak.
Okay, so not only do we have three craft, we have witnesses that see it morph its shape.
Oh, that's correct. Oh, without question. We have witnesses that were contacted that they won't even tell you about, which I'll get into here in just a little bit. There's so much to this story, and so little of it has been exposed to the public. You know, it's mind-boggling. And I take great pride in coming on the air and telling what I know as a witness. I'm not an investigator. I'm not a researcher. You know, those tags I don't put on myself. But I'm probably the most involved witness you've ever met. And my territory, my sales territory, was the entire state of Arizona plus southern Nevada. So I had access with the companies I sold to and so forth. A lot of these people worked for these companies. So once they found out about me and so forth, I mean, it was overwhelming. I mean, people contacted me and coming up to me, the things that people saw. And there's a lot of proud people up throughout the state of Arizona that were insulted in the early hours because of what the media did by, you know, they would interject the giggle factor and they'd laugh at these people, they'd make fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just recoiled back and said, okay, I'm just not going to tell you my story. And that's what happened.
Well, and, you know, there again, this is what we're talking about. You know, these people in the media that do that are just, you know, mental jackasses. I don't know why they do it.
Kevin, I think they feel they have to. I think it's an obligation they have. I think it's the calming factor that they think they put over the public to calm people down so we'll sleep at night. But what they didn't take into consideration, Hale-Bopp was out that night, and every night in that time of year, thousands and thousands of people would go out and watch the comet, and the comet was, I'm pretty sure you could watch it in the east of the early morning, and you could watch it to the north at night.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of people out because of Hale-Bopp.
Well, you know, that's true. And one of the things that was said, I've been critical of Fife Symington. And
me too.
Well, people, you know, some folks say, well, yeah, but he's now come forward and said he didn't mean to offend anybody. Okay, that's fine. If you knock a brick off a 20-story building and it hits somebody in the head and kills them, you can say you didn't mean to do it, but it still did it. And you know, and his explanation was, people were getting so hysterical. I felt like I had to do something to sort of take some of the steam out of this. Hysterical? People weren't hysterical. The only thing people got hysterical about, and they really didn't, was why aren't you answering our freaking questions?
Well, amen, brother. And here's the thing. All witnesses will tell you just how friendly and how peaceful. They used words like benevolence. You would think if you see this monstrosity of an object floating by with no noise, something you've been told all your life does not exist, and it's passing right in front of you or over your head or whatever your viewpoint was, you would think people would be startled. But there was not that. That did not happen. Nobody loaded their guns and got in the car and headed for the mountains, dove under the bed. Kids didn't start crying, no. Mm-hmm. Everybody will tell you just how peaceful of an event it was. And that is true. And it's true for us. We didn't get startled. We felt non-threatened. There was no threatening feature of this craft whatsoever. There wasn't anything that got hurt, destroyed, nothing. It was a total peaceful event. So there was no hysteria. Mm-hmm. You know, and here's the thing. Governor Symington, you know, he had his press conference, and he had the guy come out in the alien suit, and he goes, you guys are just taking this way too seriously. And that was a big laugh and everything else. Well, mm-hmm. That's all fine and dandy, and I guess that's what you're supposed to do if you're a politician.
Well, you're certainly not supposed to tell the truth.
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, to a certain point. I guess, you know, even politicians and military people, and, I mean, you know, they draw the limit as to what you should and shouldn't know, you know, I mean. They didn't really know what it was. This caught everybody by surprise. This caught the military by surprise. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just Arizona that had the mass sightings. This thing started in Norfolk, Virginia, earlier in the day. I mean, they had sightings, too. It's called the Norfolk Incident. Mm-hmm. And there was also sightings in Iowa and Nebraska that night as well. So it wasn't just really Arizona. And you know, Governor Symington, when he came forward on James Fox's show, you know, in his first report that he read, he said he was looking towards the White Tank Mountains. And, you know, we sit here and looked at each other, and what are you talking about? The White Tanks are to the west. And then all of a sudden, his story now is that he was looking towards Squaw Peak. So I scratched my head at that one, too, Kevin. And I've never met the governor. You know, I respect him. But, you know, the reports just don't, there's no synchronicity there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I can't answer that.
Well, you know, I'm all I say about it is, you know, people were offended by what he did. They were angered by what he did. It was as if he was saying to the very people who paid his salary, go away. I'm the governor. You're not. Go away. That's the impression he gave. And then further... there were things that were done to Francis Barwood. I'm not sure how much he had a hand in it, but he did apparently have a hand in some of it, at least some of the things I've heard. And all she was doing was saying, wait a minute, let's get answers for these people.
That's absolutely correct. Now, Francis Emma Barwood is a very dear friend of mine. I've known her now for about 12 and a half years. She lives up in Dewey right now, which is north of Phoenix. Her and her husband, Mike, are very good friends of ours. She's a battler, and she's a little lady. I mean, she's small, you know, but she, man, this lady's a bull. And, you know, it was more the media that attacked her and ruined her. It was not the governor as much. It was the press. It was the New Times. It was the newspaper. It was the articles. It was... Benson's cartoon of the Star Trek going in the ship Enterprise, going in one ear and out the other. You know, it was acts like that actually hurt the situation. She was a very gutsy lady who went to the city council meeting and says, why don't we investigate what flew over restricted airspace? It violated airspace at Sky Harbor Airport. Why doesn't anybody want to figure out what this thing is? And then she was told she shouldn't have asked that question, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I love her, man. She's a great lady. She's a fighter.
Oh yeah, she's been on the show here several times. And
I love her. I mean, she's fun. I mean, she is, and you know, I mean, she's what you want in a politician. because she'll fight for you. Then that's what you want.
And yeah, but it is so rare.
But we don't get that anywhere in America anymore.
But let's go back to the evening of the sighting. We're about a minute and a half away from the next break. After the Prescott Valley sighting, this thing is still headed south, apparently, toward Phoenix. What's the next thing that happens?
We have witnesses all the way down throughout the entire state. It's not just the one craft heading south, but there are multiple events going on throughout the state in the 8 o'clock hour. So the path line that's going from this one from Chino Valley down through Prescott and Prescott Valley, it's now, I'd probably say, 80, 90 miles away from the northern part of Phoenix. And at that point in time, this one craft that Ann Baker saw accelerated and was heading towards Phoenix. And then the next sighting of that object, more likely, was Tim Lee's sighting in the north Phoenix area.
All right. We have to step away for a break here in 30 seconds. And I don't want us to get into too much before the break, because then we have to interrupt it and then come back to it. So
I got a lot to tell you, Kevin.
Well, and we're all ears, believe me. All right, folks, we're going to step away for just a couple of minutes here for our break. And when we come back, we will come back to the gigantic object as it begins to fly over Phoenix and what's going on with all of that here in Phoenix. Don't go away. Talking with Mike Fortson. He is a resident of the Phoenix area and one of the witnesses to the Phoenix Lights. So instead of hearing what the news media wants you to hear about the Phoenix Lights, you're getting to hear from one of the eyewitnesses. And I think that's vitally important. Mike, you said we're into the 8 o'clock hour now. It's March 13th, 1997. And people in the Phoenix area are beginning to see this craft.
Absolutely. What I'd like to say to you and your listeners first is the 8 o'clock hour should actually be called the massive UFO flyover of Arizona, March 13th, 1997. Because in the 8 o'clock hour, now as this craft is first being seen in the Phoenix area, I'm going through a timeline here. Is when it left the Prescott Valley area around 8:20, it was also seen in Glendale at 8:20, which is in the far west valley. It was seen in the north mountains of Phoenix, reported at 8:20. At 8:20, it was reported by Ozma Linderman in South Scottsdale as it was heading over her and her boyfriend Willie. It was passing over them and heading towards Sky Harbor. At that time, it was also seen at 8:23 in Phoenix, 8:28 in Scottsdale, 8:30 in Phoenix, 8:30 in Glendale, 8:30 in Mesa. And if you think about how big the Valley of the Sun is, there's no way something that low and that slow could be seen in all those cities at the same time. Now, also around 8:28 to 8:30, that's when Max and Shala Saracen, who was in the Far East Valley in Mesa, saw the black triangle pass over their head from the east heading west. So, again, we got multiple witnesses, and at that point in time, I mean, there's multiple craft. We had V-shaped objects, and now we got a black triangle that Max Saracen saw. At 8:30 is when my wife and I saw our sighting in Chandler, which is in the Southeast Valley. It continues on 8:30 in Ahwatukee, which is south of Phoenix and would be west of me about 15 miles. Again, it was seen in Casa Grande at 8:30. So it was literally all over the state in the 8 o'clock hour, 8:35 again in Phoenix, 8:40 in Apache Junction, 8:45 in Phoenix, 8:45 in Saddlebrook, which is north of Tucson. And that's when we get into a variety of the Tucson sightings. But then again, we go to 8:50, and we're back in Mesa and Chandler.
Well, and just for folks that are not from this area, let me give them just one comparison. You have 8:30 an 8:30 sighting in Phoenix, but at the same time at 8:30 you have one in Casa Grande. That's a 45-minute drive from Phoenix.
Yeah.
And that's traveling at 65 miles an hour. It's 45 minutes to the east southeast of Phoenix.
And also at 8:45 Tucson, which is 100 miles south of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if the accurate timeline were to be displayed, and Michael Tanner and Larry Lowe's working on this, is you have multiple craft, between three for sure, that we have witnesses for three. Max Saracen saw the triangle. Everybody else pretty much an open V-shape, whether it was lights of red or white or the V-shaped craft itself. You have multiple objects. And it's all over the state in the 8 o'clock hour. And that's why I prefer to call it the massive UFO flyover of Arizona, March 13th, 1997. Now, producers keep telling me, Mike, we can't use that. It's too long. I said, well, wait a minute. It's the most accurate description there is. Phoenix lights. These lights just went over downtown Phoenix. The Phoenix lights were the five videos at 10 o'clock that were taken towards the Barry Goldwater Range. Those can be called the Phoenix lights, but they're not over Phoenix. They're not even in Maricopa County.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusion. If anybody was to use one word that best describes what happened on March 13th, it has to be the word confusion.
Well, most of the time when people are discussing the Phoenix lights and they're trying to debunk the whole thing, they go with a flare story. But if you look at the pictures of the flares, which were dropped 2 hours after this, the sighting of this craft or these craft, 2 hours later, flares were dropped. Okay, you look at those pictures and you look at the videos of the flares, and guess what? They look like flares. And, they're not evenly spaced. They don't hold a line. There's some a little higher than the others, which are a little bit lower.
Okay.
And they look like flares.
I got something to say here. If there's five total videos, there is six, but one of them got withdrawn. There's five videos. Three of them, one would be Mike Christian, one would be Terry Proctor, and the other would be Chuck Reardon. Three different points. One's in Apache Junction, one's in North Phoenix, and the other one's in the West Valley. They all have elevated homes. They're on mountainside homes. Now, the flare footage that the world gets to see, those three are more than likely flares. Now, Tom King's video and Steve Blonder's video that was shot in Ahwatukee are more direct pinpoints of light, and they are in a straight line, evenly spaced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that one is one that's very unique to all these videos. Now, no witnesses were close enough in the 10 o'clock hour to determine just what those lights were. When most people say those are flares, well, more than likely they are, but if we use Occam's razor, they're flares because we don't know what it is. But the truth is no witnesses was close enough to those distant lights in the 10 o'clock hour to really determine for sure what they were precisely, accurately, with footage or testimony or anything else. So I say more than likely they're flares. I try to anyway. Now, Tom King's video and Steve Blonder's video, those are good ones, and I got them, and I can email them to you. And if anybody wants to send me an email, I'll be happy to send you an attachment with these videos, and you can make your own determination. I was in bed at 10 o'clock. I didn't get to see those. Now, according to Dr. Bruce McAbee, and I trust him, I like him, is those lights had to have been ignited, not dropped, but ignited, around 17,000 foot altitude in order to be seen in the Phoenix metro area. We got curvature of the earth, we got mountains. See, according to the Air Force, the A-10s, Warthogs that were the Maryland Air National Guard at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson were responsible for dropping those flares. Now, the standard operating procedure for an A-10 dropping flares is a 6,000-foot drop, a 3,000-foot ignition, and a 500-foot it extinguishes. Now, the purpose of the flare is to illuminate the ground. And you're not going to do any good to anybody if you're lighting them up 3 miles up in the sky. They're not going to illuminate the ground. So I call it, and a lot of other people call it that study this, it is a diversionary tactic. It's an intentional diversionary flare drop to attract attention, and there were videos taken of these lights. Now, Richard Motzer, who was the MUFON Arizona field investigator at the time, he even determined that the number of people that was able to see this flare drop was less than 20. Okay? Not very many people saw this.
Mm-hmm.
It's because most of us live on the base of the floor, in the valley of the sun. We live in the valley. We can't see that.
Yeah, but, and folks need to understand that
to the 8 o'clock.
Well, folks that aren't from here need to understand the geography of this. The Valley of the Sun is a bowl, and it's surrounded. It is a valley, of course, because it has mountains on either side, but it has mountains all the way around it. And so the Barry Goldwater range where they do drop stuff from airplanes is on the other side of the mountains to the south. And so if you're living on the floor of the valley here, you can't see across those mountains to see what's going on the other side.
No.
If you can, you must be Superman.
There's never been a recreation or a redo, if you want to call it, of any of the events in the 8 o'clock hour. None of the 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock, later at 10:20 up in North Cave Creek. None of this has ever, people say, all right, well, if it's military, do it again and let us watch and we'll admit to you that it's military. They can't even accurately do the flare drop because they drop those flares at 6,000 feet. They ignite at 3. That was an intentional diversionary flare drop to be seen. Now, there's something else, and I don't want to jump around or anything, but we went to DEFCON 3 that night, and I don't know if you know that or not, Kevin.
I had not heard that. But we have to go to break. We'll come back at DEFCON 3. We'll be back, folks, right after this.
Simmons would want to be if he could be a talk host. Here's Kevin.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and welcome to those of you who are just joining us just now in this second hour. We're talking with Mike Fortson, an eyewitness to what has come to be known as the Phoenix Lights. Now, Mike, when we went to break, you were just beginning to tell us about we went to DEFCON 3. How do you know that? How are you sure about that?
I'm fairly positive about that, and I'll tell you what the circumstances was. And here's what happened. At approximately 10:20 p.m. that night, way north of Phoenix in the area called Cave Creek, that's where retired airline Captain Trigg Johnston lives. Now, Captain Johnston was outside with his son, Logan. They were working on the gate out there. They have horses out there. And he saw a series of lights heading towards him. And in his report, he goes, uh-oh, we're in for a show. And as this craft passed over his head, he said that it had an inside area of over a square mile, and I could easily land my 737 on it. Now, at 10:20 p.m. Arizona time, we're talking 20 after 12 in the East Coast, March 14th. And the reason I'm taking you now to the East Coast is then-President Bill Clinton was at golfer Greg Norman's home in Key Biscayne, Florida. There was a very famous story that came out of that because supposedly President Clinton at that point in time had tripped and hurt his knee. And it made nationwide news that they had to rush him out of Greg Norman's home in Key Biscayne, and he was flown to the mountains of Virginia. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Now, this is where it really gets interesting, okay? Because the Phoenix Lights, they'll tell you that it was only in the 8 o'clock hour, came through Prescott, down through Phoenix, went to Tucson, back up, and that was it. Had a flare drop at 10 o'clock, and that was it. Everybody went to bed. Well, that's not true. Okay, 10:20, the large craft was coming back through again in the North Valley. And Captain Johnson had it, and you can find his report and a lot of reports on the Phoenix Lights at the UFO Chronicles. And Frank Warren's done a wonderful job on putting together all these reports, and Trick Johnson's two reports are on there, as a matter of fact. But anyway, that's where it really got interesting, and we did go to DEFCON 3 because nobody knew exactly what was happening. In the early hours of March 13th, we had a satellite called the MSTI-3, the MSTI-3. And MSTI-3 is an Air Force asset. Its mission was to take photographs of hot objects and missiles, detect objects from space, and it sent photographs to Cheyenne Mountain, U.S. Space Command. MSTI-3's battery suddenly went dead on March 13th. And they went dead, and MSTI-3 went into elliptic orbit. MSTI-3 was manufactured by Spectrum Astro in Gilbert, Arizona, and that's where I became involved. Is they were so close to me as I went in and I got to talk with people and I got to speak with one of the engineers whose wife is also an 830 witness, and he told me the story about MSTI-3 and how its batteries were basically shut down for no reason whatsoever. There's no scientific explanation they could come up with why a healthy satellite suddenly was drained of its power and fell into elliptic orbit. And that, I guess, means where it turns its solar panels towards the sun and tries to regain its energy. That's the point we went to DEFCON 3. There was total confusion. There was military awareness. They knew very well that there were things going on, but they were not in control of it. They couldn't control it, and they really didn't know what it was. And there was a witness by the name of Mitch Stanley around 8:30 who had his 10-inch Dobsonian telescope, and he's the one who said that he saw the high-flying fixed-wing aircraft at high altitude, and that's what it was. Well, I believe his story, but they were military aircraft, and they were following and watching these objects.
Okay. And so, let me make sure I understand this. We went to DEFCON 3 when the satellite went dead.
No, sir. The satellite went dead in the early hours. We went to DEFCON 3 about 10:20 that night when Captain Johnson saw the large craft. The military and the other organizations that are involved with our security and so forth became aware in the early hours when the satellite, the MSTI-3, MSTI-3, actually, it was sending its pictures to NORAD, and then it just went blank. It went dead. And that was the thing that really aroused suspicion. And
do you have any idea what it was that was the straw that broke the camel's back that made them say, okay, we're going to DEFCON 3? Do you have any idea what it was, or was it just the accumulation of all of it?
I think it had more to do with uncertainty as to what was going on. There were multiple craft in Arizona. There had been multiple craft seen throughout the United States. In the early hours, the MSTI-3 went down. It goes back a step further back with the article that was written in the Scientific American in July of 1997, whereas for the first time a gamma ray burst was photographed for the first time. And in this story in the Scientific American on page 2, it says that inside the bright point of light was a somewhat elongated background object. That might be one of the beginning factors right there.
Hmm. Okay. All right, Mike, you and I are going to continue to talk, but what I want to do is invite our listeners to join us if they have questions or comments, and there may be some other eyewitnesses to the Phoenix Lights that would like to call in and share with us. The telephone numbers are as follows. The main studio number is 623-444-5889. We have a toll-free number that works throughout the United States and Canada. Now, if you can call me on the main number without it costing you anything, please use that main number, 623-444-5889. If it's going to cost you something to call me, you can, if you wish, use our toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. If you are outside of the USA and you are outside of Canada, that means you're in the UK, you're in Europe, you're in Asia, you're in Africa, you're in Australia, you're just not in the USA or Canada. If you don't want to make the international long-distance call, you can use the flash message feature on my website. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com, click on the link that says flash message, and post your question or comment. And as soon as you hit send, it will begin to flash on my screen. Ergo, we call it flash message. Okay? All right, 623-444-5889 or toll-free at 888-223-4599. All right, now, Mike, we go to DEFCON 3. What does that mean? I mean, I know, but describe for our audience, what does this mean?
Well, it's a warning. I mean, it's one of the highest levels of security alerts that we have. When I was in the military, of course, I was in the Honor Guard. We never had that experience, but my knowledge of it is this is one of the highest series of readinesses that we can come to. There may be a danger factor to the country, to the republic. It was so serious that President Clinton was rushed out of golfer Greg Norman's home. He did not go straight to Bethesda Naval Hospital to get his knee repaired whatsoever. He went into the mountains of Virginia, so I'm told. For any history buffs or people that's into the conspiracies of the Clinton administration, there'll be people there that'll tell you that there is no pictures whatsoever of scars or repairs or anything on President Clinton's knee. That, you know, anybody that knows Clinton and everything else, you know, the guy's a total ham bone. He loves photo ops. I mean, you could see his freezer burnt chicken legs when he was jogging by McDonald's. you know, in all honesty, I mean, the guy never turned down a picture, and yet we also saw photographs of him in a wheelchair. I think he went to Japan and he had those crutches. It was fraud. I mean, there was no operation as far as people are telling me. And we did go to a very serious... Now, one of the things that was part of the evidence of the DEFCON 3 part, I mean, we're just civilians. We don't know this stuff. But here's the thing is, there was a guy at American Computer Corporation who says his mainframe office received a fax that they should not have received. And it was the fax that basically talked about the high level of security that we went to. So there is evidence.
Mm. Okay, you know, the president of American Computer Corporation also went on record as saying when Philip Corso came out with his book that indeed his company had received extraterrestrial or alien parts, you know, electronic stuff for them to back engineer and figure out.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's pretty interesting. All right, let's go to the telephone.
We only go by the evidence that's presented before us.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Mike. Great show tonight, guys.
Hello.
Good.
Hello there. Yes, you know, I'm not surprised that Arizona was probably one of the biggest hubs for one of these UFO sightings, considering the fact that one of the biggest intersection of ley lines, of energy ley lines, is right close nearby. And it would be a perfect spot for any alien craft to, you know, to fuel up. But other than the fact that that area could possibly be some sort of interstellar gas station, I wonder what other motives would they have had to be in that area? What are your thoughts on that, Mike? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
I have no idea what the purpose was, except I can tell you that it was a friendly visit. There was no damage done. There was no loss of life. There was no loss of property. There was no damage to property. I can tell you that if we accumulate all the witness testimony, that there were multiple craft, not just one. The Phoenix area, the Nevada area, New Mexico area, Colorado area, California, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sightings in this area. Their purpose, I do not know. I personally believe that some of the characteristics of the V-shapes, when they pancaked on top of each other, formed a white ball of light and vanished, that pretty much leads me to think that there's some type of shapeshifter craft, that they have the technology to do this. And it was brought up before me, and I've said all along that I really feel that these were interdimensional objects, that they entered our area through a portal or a doorway, which they weren't far, far away, as far as, you know, 100 million light years away or anything like that. I really believe that they're close by. But their actual purpose, no one knows. I have skywatched almost daily since then for almost 13 years, and I want to see it again. I really do. I hope I get communicated with like Captain Trigg Johnson was when he was told we're not a threat. I hope that they know my passion to know the truth, that I get an opportunity to find out. And when I do, I guarantee you I'll get a hold of Kevin.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Well, just before we do, let me comment on that. If you have contact with these whoever's in these craft, and I'm serious about this, if you have contact with them at any point, tell them I want an interview with them. I'm serious. I want them on the air with me.
Me too. As far as we know, there's only two witnesses that were contacted that night. One was retired airline Captain Trigg Johnson, who was told we're not a threat. And then you have the Bradley Evans family that was driving north up the interstate from Tucson. They had a swim meet with their daughters at ASU that weekend, and they had what they were heading north, this thing was heading south down the interstate. They saw the series of lights heading towards them. They were driving a BMW. They had the moonroof open. They had photographic, they had cameras in the car, in the back seat. They had their two teenage daughters and another girl in the back seat. And as the object got over their car, they were heading north, the object was heading south. As the object got over their car, it now reversed itself and was now going backwards 75 miles an hour with their car for approximately 15 minutes. And she was told, do not stop, keep on driving, this does not concern you. And this stayed. Now, picture this. It's heading south, they're heading north. When it gets over their car, it reverses itself and was now going backwards over their car. How do you do that?
Pretty amazing.
And I got their five-page report. I've got their five-page report, and they're both professors at the U of A.
All right, we'll come back to that in just a moment. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Angela Joyner, and I'm calling from Dublin, Texas.
Hello, Angela Joyner from Dublin.
Yes. Hello, Mike. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Angela. How are you?
I'm great. I've just been listening to the show, and I didn't get in on from the very beginning, but I'm curious about the things that you were told about President Clinton, about his knee problem being a fraud, or it was faked because he was actually rushed out of Greg Norman's home because of this alert.
Yes.
Did I understand that correctly?
You understood that perfectly correct. If you go back in history,
what?
Go ahead.
I'm curious as to how you know that. Who told you that?
I was in a political, I was into the political conspiracies thing. Clinton administration, CAS was the name of the group, and I was allowed to come in and be a lurker in there. And as it happened and so forth, they were talking about this in the East Coast. And a lot of these are reporters and so forth, in the East Coast. And that's where I became privileged to the article. I even wrote an article about this, because there's no evidence whatsoever of any scarring or any tissue, any photographs or anything else, and yet we were told that he had injured his knee, he had to have surgery at golfer Greg Norman's home in Key Biscayne.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
Yes.
Nobody's really gone on the record to say that, evidently, right?
That's correct.
Well, that would be interesting if we could really get a handle on that. I'm researching some stuff with Grant Cameron, and that would be a good thing to find out.
It's really easy to find, because if you go back to March 14th, 1997, in the newspapers, it would be there.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kevin. Thanks for giving me a minute.
All right. Thank you for calling in.
The Stephenville Lights, Angela. That's a tremendous case.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call. All right. For those of you who don't know Angela Joyner, you're thinking, boy, that sounds familiar. She is the reporter that was reporting on the Stephenville Lights and the Stephenville UFO sightings. And her newspaper told her she was reporting on it too much, and she kept reporting on it, and they suddenly had no longer a need for her services. So that's Angela, okay? 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can use the Flash message feature if you wish. And we do have some. We have, I want to get this one from Columbia. This is from Peter. He says, Mike, have you heard of any reports of the occupants of the craft, alien entities, or abductions in connection with the Phoenix Lights?
Good question. The answer to that is going to be yes. That was told by Shala Saracen as the Black Triangle passed over them. It was the Black Triangle that came in from the east over their house in the far east valley that was heading west. And in Shala's report, she said that it was so low she could see a series of lights, and there were actually beings in the back of the craft looking through the windows. And that's the only contact I've heard of that. But very good question, and that's a report that very few know about. And I believe that Bill Hamilton wrote that in his book, The Phoenix Lights.
Outstanding. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Hello?
You're on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Okay. My name is Margaret, and I'm calling from Denver.
Okay, Margaret.
And I happened to be in Apache Junction that night.
Oh.
We had gone. We had been working the Renaissance Fair out there, and we had gone out to grab some snacks at the grocery store to go watch the comet in the desert there at the trailhead.
And did you see the big massive object?
Yeah, we saw something, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't flares because it blocked the view of the mountain. You couldn't see the stars behind it. You couldn't see the mountains. You know, if you looked up, you couldn't see the stars. You just see this kind of V-shaped looking thing. And none of us were really too afraid or anything. It was just kind of freaky.
That's what Mike was saying. Mike was saying that he hasn't heard any reports of anybody being really frightened by this thing.
Yeah, the Margaret, one thing I heard, yeah.
What time was it?
It's just after 8:30.
There you go.
I don't think it was 8:45 yet. I think it was just after 8:30.
God bless you. Thanks for calling in. Did you ever make a report? Did you ever file a report or talk to anybody about it or draw a picture?
No,
or?
We felt kind of harebrained. There was a group of us. But like I said, we were the ones working the Renaissance fairs, so they look at you a little funny when you say these things like, you're out in the desert in a tent.
Well, you know, it could be that these beings heard about the Renaissance Fair and just wanted to come check it out, you know?
It could have been.
Could have been.
It's a good fair.
Margaret, how many people were in your group, Margaret?
There was about 12 of us all coming out of the grocery store there in the parking lot, heading for the, we were going up to the trailhead.
Was it such an impact to you that you stopped what you were doing to watch it?
I had such an impact that even having MS, I still remember the time and the place and what day it was.
Well, 13 years later and you still remember it. God bless you.
Yeah. Well, I'll let y'all go.
Margaret, are you a first-time caller?
I am.
Well, we have a policy here. When you're a first-time caller, if you let me know, we give you some applause.
I'll take all the applause I can get.
Well, thanks for the call. Yeah, 12 people coming out of the store in Apache Junction, and they all see this thing. And it, like she said, it wasn't flares because it blocked out the mountain.
Kevin, there's also 12 more witnesses that you can add to the list.
Well, and Mike, how many witnesses do you think really there are?
I have no idea. It's well into the multiple thousands. Now, last night, if you watched the National Geographic show, they said it was in the hundreds. Mm-hmm. There's just no way. This is in the multiple thousands. And it's really a shame that the media dropped the ball on this early enough and they didn't put the word out, you know, how many people saw this, where were you, what time was it, and what did you see? If they would have done that in the early hours, we'd have a more accurate number for you.
Well, you know, those are basic elements of any investigation. Who, what, when, where, and how, sometimes why. But who,
and
what,
you're a retired police officer, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, now, here's something for you. When the Phoenix fights happened, the two investigators with MUFON stayed with the 10 o'clock videos of the flares.
Okay, hold that thought. We have to take a break, and we'll come back to that thought right after this break. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Mike Fortson this evening. Now, Mike, when we went away for break, you had just asked me if I used to be a police officer, and I said yes, and you were about to say something, and then we had to go to break.
What I wanted to say, Kevin, is if you're put in charge of an investigation, you don't start at the finish.
That's true.
You start at the beginning.
That's true.
You go to the very beginning. You try to get all the facts, all the witnesses, all the testimony. You try to get all the evidence that you can accumulate and then go through the time frame, in this case, and as far as Arizona's concerned, from 5:30, 8:16, all the way through, actually through midnight that night of March 13th. And what they actually did was, for the first several months, if not years, is they stayed on those 5, 10 o'clock videos. And that's what the world saw, and that's what the world was told. And it was just wrong. And as an investigator, you would start at the beginning. Is that not correct?
Well, that's true. In fact, what you would try to do, it works like this. Let's say someone throws a rock into the water, okay? You can't find the rock by looking under the last ripple. If you want to find the rock, you have to go to the center of all the ripples. So you get back to where it started. And the truth is laying right there. It's not
That's
laying out at the
analogy.
Edges. Yeah, it's not laying out at the edges.
I want to say something while this thought just came into my head. When I was talking about the gamma ray burst with the burst of light and the somewhat elongated background object, what happened to the Misty 3 satellite and President Clinton, if your listeners would go to YouTube and type in Mike Fortson, Phoenix Lights, you'll find a video there from Dr. Lynn Kitai's documentary with Jim Tellitoso and myself that are talking about these three very subjects right there. And it's like a 5-minute video, and you can get it all. It's all posted. It's there. DEFCON 3 is mentioned. All this is mentioned, and you can watch it on a video and then, you know, determine the facts yourself.
All right. Let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Ryan in Washington.
Hello, Ryan.
Yeah. The Phoenix Lights is probably the largest U event in history. Here's what we do. You go around, collect and gather every single witness you can think of. Every person that saw it, including the governor, all the children that were playing in a T-ball game, everybody you can think of. Once you get everybody on board, what would you do to put pressure on them to at least give you some sort of answer? Or, you know, it's a shame that there hasn't been one explanation for this at all. And we're the taxpayers. It's frustrating, you know?
Well, let me throw this in. There may be no explanation. The so-called powers that be may not have an explanation. But here's what I would prefer. I would prefer the truth. I would prefer if they said, as President Truman said one time, yeah, these things happen all the time. These flying saucers and things happen all the time, and we investigate them, we talk about them. He said that. I've got the film clip, or I've got the film file from the film clip where he said that. I would prefer the truth. I would prefer just say, yep, there was something in the sky. We don't know what it is. It is being investigated.
At least say they don't know what it is. But here's the thing, and I'll let the next caller in, is that this is a case that has a potential to break the whole wide thing open, because even Senator McCain, if you can get everybody on board, and, you know, I know that there's people have other issues to take care of, but, I mean, you're talking hundreds of thousands of witnesses and people. Even McCain said that there has not been a full answer to this. He said that it's never been fully explained.
That's true.
At least try to do something, you know what I mean? Thank you for taking my call.
All right, thanks for the call. Let me give the telephone numbers quickly. 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. Go ahead, Mike.
Sorry, Kevin. I didn't mean to walk on you there.
That's all right.
One thing you said was, and that was a very good call, but I think his name was Ryan.
Right.
When he said, when you get all the witnesses together and you put pressure on them to get the truth, that's one word that I disagree with.
No, he's talking about putting pressure on the people that aren't giving us the truth. He's not talking about putting pressure on the witnesses.
To gather all the witnesses and get their testimony, this should have been done 13 years ago. And to gather all this information, then you could do it. And he's absolutely right. But I'm real curious, because he talked about the Little League game, and I don't know where he got that, but that was a fantastic story. And if I can tell you this real quick, I'll tell you about this.
Okay, let me say to the caller that's on hold, just hang on, we'll get to you in just a moment. Go ahead, Mike.
825 Phoenix area, there's a Little League game going on, and if anybody has Little Leaguers or knows anything about Little League baseball, it's always hustle in, hustle out. Nothing stops the game. This large craft passed over the Little League field, and everybody stopped. No parent, no umpire, no player, no nothing said play ball. It's a blimp or a flare or anything else. This thing literally stopped a Little League game in its tracks as it passed over. And I'm really fascinated. This guy, whoever your last caller was, he had studied this, and he knew that report. And my hat's off to him.
You will find that a great many of the vast majority of the people that listen to this show are very, very well-informed people. And that's one of the reasons I like coming to work every night. Okay, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Gary in Nebraska.
Hi, Gary.
To Mike, thanks a lot for the really hard work you've put in this. It's very obvious you have really dedicated yourself to this. Clearly, you've documented everything you've done, and that's pretty nice. I guess my question boils down to, gee, are we going to be able to have something available to us, to me for sure, that covers everything or nearly everything that you have put together on this light sighting?
Well, thank you, Gary. And I'd probably say yes. You can find all the interviews that Frank Warren's done and all the stories that I've written about this at the UFO Chronicles. It's a very large, massive website, and you can find it by the, theufochronicles.com. And if you once it loads up for you, if you scroll all the way down, right after Scott Ramsey, Scott and Susan Ramsey, you'll see me, and you'll see all my stories and interviews and everything there. I have not written a book. I really haven't thought about doing it. I do have an accumulation. But right now, Frank Warren and his website's my best source, and he puts everything on his website.
Well, all right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate so much everything you said tonight, and I hope maybe Kevin will invite you again to come back and talk some more about this. Thank you, Kevin.
All right, and we certainly will. All right, let's take a flash message from Australia, from Bob in Australia. Hi, Kevin. Great show. My question for Mike is, when it was overhead, did you feel any different, or did anyone around you feel any different? In other words, headaches, sore muscles, anything like that?
Okay. Wow, Australia, I'm honored. It did not pass over our heads. It passed in front of us. As it passed in front of us, all we could really see was the left wing of the craft. There was... The only feelings I could say that we received was non-threatening feelings. There was no anxiety. There was no fear. It was peaceful. You would think if you saw something of this profoundly massive size that it would startle you. However, you know, we were at peace with it. We weren't afraid of it. Our heart rate did not go up. I was battling my thoughts in my head about this is not supposed to exist. And that was probably the main shock that I had to deal with was, well, it does exist. But other than that, there was no loss of time or memory or any of that. And saying so, many of the witnesses did have an amnesia effect. And that's one of the parts of the massive flyover of Arizona that a lot of people don't know about. There was a lot of amnesia the next day or for a few days. And then witnesses came around and there was something that sparked them or sparked a thought. They saw something or thought something, or there was a trigger mechanism, and then all of a sudden they have complete recollection. But there was none of those feelings as it passed in front of us. That's a good question.
Here are some good questions. This is from Australia as well. It's from Blue in Australia. And he says, "Hi, Mr. Kevin Smith Show, which stands up for free speech." Okay, hi, Blue. You're right. We do. And Michael, number one, could it be an experimental craft?
The size is what, and the answer would be no, just mainly because of the size.
Okay.
And because there wasn't just one, there were multiple. And at arm's length, when I went from the nose to the end of the left wing with the nose with my left hand, the left wing with my right hand, it was well over 33 inches in length. And to answer him, how could we do that big with no visible means of propulsion? There was no noise. It was incredibly slow, incredibly low. And from all the witness reports, there were multiples of them. I've never heard of an experimental craft where three of them could pancake on top of each other, form a white ball of light, and vanish.
Question number two.
No.
Did anyone report magnetic interference, for example, with radios, TV, vehicles, and so forth?
The answer to that would be no, that I'm not aware of any of that, and that's a good question as well. But it didn't interfere with anything. It didn't stop car engines. It didn't interfere with plane computers. It didn't interfere with radio or TV. No, there was no interference that I know of. It was a total peaceful and friendly event that was actually... Well, you know, I mean, according to Hollywood movies and the things you see on TV, it was boring because nothing was damaged or killed. Nobody got hurt.
Okay, the third question. What was the thickness of this craft from the top of it to the bottom of it? How thick was it?
I would say at arm's length, about 2 inches.
So if it's a mile and a half to 2 miles in length, How thick would that be in feet?
I have no idea. I could not answer that. I'd be guessing. I was more wrapped into the length of the craft than I was the thickness. However, if it was 30 inches long at arm's length, it was probably an inch and a half to 2 inches thick at arm's length. I'll leave that for the mathematicians.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
How are we doing this evening, gentlemen?
Good.
I seen a documentary last night. I was never aware of it, but they say that there's like a Bermuda Triangle located in your guys' area, stretching across the...
Terry, a break just took over. If you'll hang on, we'll get to you first up when we come back from the break. Ladies and gentlemen, do not go away. It ain't over yet. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest, Mike Fortson, and we are on Final Approach this evening. On the line with me is Terry, and Terry, it's absolutely an obligation that I mess your name up like I do with Tony, so I call him Terry. So, Tony, go ahead.
Okay, I was watching a documentary last night, and it talked about, I never heard about this before, but they say there's like a Bermuda Triangle. I know it encompasses Arizona along the California mountains into California a little bit, Nevada, Utah, and it might incorporate New Mexico and Colorado a little bit. I'm not quite sure how big it is. And they said that there's hundreds of planes that went down there. They got wreckage of hundreds of planes that went down there. That's where Steve Fawcett, I think, went down, and they had that big search for him. And then they said that there's hundreds of others that they have never even found, you know, so I just kind of wonder, you know, if that's, you know, you guys are in an area, you know, that would project, you know, incoming, outgoing dimensional aircraft.
Well, you know, let me say this and then I'll let Mike answer. It's quite possible. If ley lines have anything at all to do with interdimensional stuff, as many people theorize, that's entirely possible. The largest intersection of ley lines in North America is right out here at South Mountain. And that's South Mountain is, as its name implies, on the south of Phoenix. And, Mike, are you familiar with what they call the Magic Castle out there?
I can look out my Arcadia door and see the South Mountain as we speak.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that he uses those words, dimensional and interdimensional, because there's so much that we don't know, but there's so much that we do know. Right after the Phoenix Lights, there was an A-10 pilot from Davis-Monthan Air Base that broke formation, heading towards the Barry Goldwater gunnery range. They were going for practice, and his name was Captain Craig Buttons, I believe, and that's with the one, the A-10 pilot that broke formation, flew all the way up north through the Arizona, and supposedly, according to Air Force, crashed his plane into the mountains of Colorado. Now, Captain Buttons had 400 or 500-pound bombs on his planes as well, and those bombs were never found. The Air Force said they found the wreckage. They had DNA identified within just a few hours, which is absurd. But to answer his question, I've been told that Captain Buttons is alive and well and his plane's intact, that he was, in fact, abducted. And this was told to me by Wendell Stevens. And at that point in time, the interdimensional objects were involved. So he asked a very good question, but, man, we need 2 more hours to go through that subject on that. Now, I know a lot of people who have said they have seen black triangles enter and leave the Earth through portals and openings that do not exist. And they're up north. They're up around Ash Fork, Drake, up around Williams in Arizona, and they have seen actually literally things enter and leave the Earth where there is no opening. So this is a fascinating area. I've been in Arizona 27 years, and I just love this type of investigation. I wish I had an opportunity to be boots on the ground with every sighting that we have. That's just not financially possible. I wish it would be. We would be very, very good at it. But there are dimensional doorways in this area. There's a new one up in southern Oregon right now. Tom Dongo wrote a book with Linda Bradshaw north of Sedona called Merging Dimensions. There's an opening that was known in northeastern Utah called the Skinwalker Ranch, and went to Palm Keller, and the guy from Las Vegas, George Knapp, wrote a book called Hunt for the Skinwalker, and that was a dimensional portal opening. So to answer his question, that was a great one, is yes, very possible.
Terry, thank you for the call.
Sure, thanks, Cap.
All right. Yeah, now, right out here at South Mountain, there is a building. It's a house. It's called, I think it's it's the Magic Castle. And right underneath that Magic Castle, there is an intersection of 14 ley lines. And that is the largest intersection of ley lines anywhere in North America. Caller, you will be our last caller for the evening, and you'll have to make it pretty quick. But your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan from Quebec City, Kevin, and I'll make it quick.
All right.
Mr. Fortson, do you think they're going to come back? Because as we know, things usually happen in threes.
I'm hoping. I'm hoping I'm there. You know, the main thing is just to be at the right place at the right time. I've always said, you know, in the very beginning is I woke up from a brief nap. The first few years, I always thought that I was given a signal or there was a reason why I woke up when I did. The last few years, I just wrote it off as just dumb luck. But I hope you're absolutely correct and that they are coming back. I hope so. And I hope I'm a part of it.
Right on. Great show, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. All right. That'll be our last call for the evening. Mike, you know, this 2 hours goes in a hurry.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah. And we still have about 5 minutes left here, but 4 or 5 minutes. Why do you hope that you're part of it? What is there about this that makes you hope?
Questions, Kevin. I've been searching and looking and thinking for 13 years now on this, and I just really hope that if it ever does return, that I'm able to be a part of it. I would like to be contacted. I mean, I have questions, and I'm sure, hopefully they're aware of that. You know, maybe they're just not a couple hundred years ahead of us in technology. Maybe they're a couple million years ahead of us in technology. And the witnesses that did get to see it were meant to see it. And if that's the case, I hope I get a encore performance.
Well, I think there's one thing very, very clear about this, and it is a message that I have said before. And so this is not anything new to our audience or to the government personnel listening to the show. And our government audience is bigger than most internet radio stations' audiences. So this is not anything new. But the general public is way out ahead of the politicians and military on this. And if these guys are going to have any credibility left when disclosure is forced upon them by these things showing up like this and just landing, when that happens, if these guys are going to have any credibility left, they better get it in gear, and they better run around in front of the band and pretend they are leading the band by just coming clean with what they know, because the general public is way ahead of the ignorant spin stories that they try to spoon feed us. And nobody believes them anymore.
One of the bad scenarios to a public landing is going to be this, is I think the area would be cordoned off by the military. I think the civilian population would be evacuated back at least a couple miles. We're going to try to coax them out. They will be captured or imprisoned. They'll be told that it's for biological reasons or something like that. I think they will not be allowed to leave, and I think that they'll end up being killed and dissected. And I think that the main goal would not be to try to find cures for cancer or colds or anything else, but the main goal is going to be for advanced weapons. And that's
I think that certainly would be the intentions of the PTBs. But you know, these guys may just decide they don't want to be captured. They may just decide to melt the weapons. You know,
They may be so advanced, Kevin, there are no weapons.
Yeah, but I'm saying our military will have weapons. These guys, these extraterrestrials, may take exception to someone trying to capture them, and they may just melt the weapons that are aimed at them.
Well, I agree. And you know, I've always said that that might be the last mistake we ever make.
It could be. It could be. Mike, stay on the phone with me for just a moment. And I want to talk with you just a moment after we go off the air. Folks, there you have it. That's a wrap for this evening. Mike Fortson, we will invite him to be back with us again. I certainly hope he will come back and talk with us, because there's so much, much more about this amazing event that we've come to call the Phoenix Lights. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.